four tires. She'd often make dinner, and then afterward, we'd sit on her porch in white wicker chairs. I remember the wind, how it would blow across the fields and in among the barns and move the chimes hanging from the eaves on that porch. Sometimes we'd talk, other times we'd sit for long periods in silence. I was in that tenuous space between being a boy and being a man, trying to sort out who I was and where I was headed, surrounded by all the dramas and insanities of high school. Everything around me was ranked. There were the best students and the best athletes and the coolest kids who got invited to all the right parties. Everywhere I turned, there was someone better, someone smarter, faster, more tuned in to those ambiguous codes that sort out who gets it and who doesn't. I lived with this perpetual ache that I was a half step behind, haunted by those questions. Do I have what it takes? Will I ever find my place? Am I good enough? But then I'd sit there in one of those wicker chairs, and those questions would temporarily fade away. And I'd listen to that wind, and in those moments, in that place, everything was all right, even if it wasn't. I experienced a wordlessness there on that porch, a sublime state of grace in which the presence of another communicates a world of truth without any sentences or statements. Sometimes my grandma would tell me about the great love of her life, her first husband, Preston, my dad's father. Preston served on an aircraft carrier in the Pacific Ocean in World War II. The day he came home from the war, he walked in the house, greeted his family, dropped off his bags, and then left the house to find a job, which he went to first thing the next morning. The stories she told about Preston were like that one, full of action and purpose. This wasn't a man who sat around waiting for things to happen. He'd gotten cancer during the war, and he died when he was 34. According to my dad, no one told him and his brother Douglas about the seriousness of their dad's illness. One day, my dad's uncle came by and told him he had to take him somewhere. My dad got in the back seat of his uncle's car, saw his cousin sitting there, and asked, "Where are we going?" His cousin replied, "Your dad died. We're going to the funeral home." When they arrived at the funeral home, my dad was told that he wasn't allowed to cry because they were happy that his dad was now in heaven. My dad was 8 at the time. His brother Douglas was 6. When my dad was 17, he and his brother were involved in an accident. Douglas was critically injured, and an ambulance came to get him. My grandma got in the ambulance with him as it left for the hospital, leaving my dad at the scene. The next morning, he learned that his brother had died, and then at the funeral, he was told, "You aren't going to shed any tears because we're happy that Douglas is in heaven." My grandma's name was Eileen. My dad's name is Rob, and from an early age, I could feel the history between them. Love, yes. Loyalty, absolutely. But also a certain lingering melancholy, a muted grief hovering in the air between them. They didn't come from a culture where you talk about your pain. The dominant messages they picked up were more along the lines of be good, keep moving, follow the rules, and trust that this is all some sort of divine plan. So they did. They'd experienced unspeakable loss together, and it had bonded them to each other, but it was a bond forever tinged with loss. I picked up on all that muted grief floating in the air between my grandma and my dad, and from an early age, I just wanted to make them laugh. That's what I remember. I made her laugh. I made him laugh. If I could get them laughing so hard they were in tears, I knew I'd done something.